This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to the show. Today, we have a lot to talk about. Where should we start? Whoop 4.0? I think that's a great place to start. Well, I think it's genius, honestly, by Whoop. You keep people engaged by knowing it doesn't stop at 3. It goes to 4. Will go to 5. People are going to hang around and find out. But what is new about the 4.0? It's not even an ad read.
How long has it been? It's been 2 years. Exactly 2 years.
Two years. I'm most excited about the 4.0 because it's actually slightly smaller. What I'm second most excited about is they realize that one of the complaints about Whoop is it's on your wrist. Believe it or not, people actually get a little bit sick of having it on their wrist. And so they're actually bringing out more attachments so you can wear it on different parts of your body, which I don't think I'll ever wear something on different parts of my body more than potentially the wrist, because maybe the wrist is just like the most convenient, but it is going to give the skin around your wrist a bit of a break. And I think I think everyone that's worn
But do you have to wear their clothes? Because they're bringing out their own clothes that hold the sensor.
I thought it'd be like a sleeve or something.
No, so they're bringing out like, they got compression tops, leggings, shorts, sports bra, bracelets, boxers, but things like American for underpants.
Oh yeah.
And it like slips into the clothes.
Oh dude, I would wear that for sure. So I'd wear like, some boxers.
Yeah, it's like, I think it has to be like Whoop clothing.
Yeah. No, I'd wear some briefs with the Whoop in it because you wouldn't notice it as much. Yeah.
So now you have to wear their clothes as well. Absolutely.
No,
genius.
It's good. It's good because like, you know, like I'm happy to wear it on my wrist when I'm training and stuff. I kind of like it.
Yeah, but you'd like to take it off sometimes.
Yeah. Like if I go to the beach and stuff, I don't want it on my wrist all the time. If I'm like going out to dinner, I don't want it on my wrist. Like we can do any of those things really. But yeah. And that skin, it just gets so itchy and like fleshy and stuff. And you know what as well? Like when you have... I guess the clothing wouldn't really solve this, but it's annoying when you have a shower and it gets wet and then it's like soaked for ages.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you put a shirt on.
Yeah.
Soaks the shirt. Like often I'll take it off on the weekend just to have a break.
They've thought about these things. They want to see all those things. But obviously some of the exciting stuff that's in there as well, not just the aesthetic stuff. I don't know if there's been a battery life increase, but I know the battery pack is now waterproof, which was a big complaint.
Yeah, the battery pack is waterproof. It's so good for me because I have forgotten this so many times.
Man, surprisingly, I have as well. Because you charge it at night
and then you forget.
And you go in the shower and it gets wet and it breaks. So that's obviously a big one.
No, I think the battery life is the same. It's still 5 days, but the actual thing is smaller. So they've like had to upgrade the quality of the battery because it's a smaller unit. Okay. So the actual battery is a lot smaller.
It's smaller, makes sense. And one of the other things now is once you have optimal sleep, it starts vibrating.
No, yeah, it does. So it can vibrate. I think it'll probably vibrate in the future for other things.
Okay.
But the one thing they've said is that, it's like, I used to use that app. You probably have the same one, Sleep Cycles. They would like wake you up when you're in light sleep.
Yeah.
The alarm would go. So it's basically the same as that. So it'll vibrate because that would like annoy you. It's like, you're sleeping really well. It starts vibrating. Like, wake up. No, it can wake you up in light sleep.
Oh, that's good.
Which I actually think is really cool.
That's good.
So, obviously, because it's tracking sleep more accurately than, say, my iPhone, you can get those apps on your phone, you put it under your pillow, but really what it's doing is just basing it off your movement.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're pretty inaccurate. I think there's another one that bases off sound, like you're snoring and stuff, whereas I think this is probably the most accurate. And as you go into lighter sleep, it can wake you up within like half an hour of your designated wake-up time.
Yeah.
So, you like feel good when you wake up.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's exciting. And then they're doing blood oxygen saturation, which is cool, which I'm excited to use as well, which will just be interesting when you do like high intensity exercise, see like your blood,
would
your blood
O2 for me count, when I was passing out in that
what
we had that podcast
on the altitude room, but you had it on the O2 saturation, you did, you had
you had it on
that's why we knew, because it dropped so low.
That's
you're
right.
Like 78%, the guy's like, you're gonna die, so we rolled you out, keep you alive. But the other one, they're doing is skin temperature. I'm not sure how skin temperature relates to health, but obviously they're going to have stuff in there that's going to help guide you with their technology. But man, just Whoop continues to conquer the world, which I'm excited about. So I think it comes out end of this month. But
yeah, it says here, I'm not sure exactly how it works. On my Whoop, it says I can just go on the list to get it. Pretty sure if you have like 6 months left on your membership, you just they're send you one for free.
Yeah, we've got that special VIP email, bro.
Yeah.
It's like, boys, we'll send it to you now.
They're actually sending us the 7.0 ahead of time.
The 8.0.
It's a full body. It's a full body suit.
We're booked in for surgery. They're putting it inside of our brain. But okay, so talking about, I guess, endurance-related training, I actually ran... Well, I was very fortunate, actually. I thought that I was doing the program, the marathon next weekend. I was a little bit scared. I brought it up on the team call, and you were like, that sounds wrong. I didn't put the whole program in. So I still got 6 weeks till I run the marathon.
You got 3 weeks going up and you got 3 weeks coming down. The last week is the marathon.
Yeah. So I was going to speak to you about this and we can do it now on the show, I guess. But I'm actually going to try and cut off, say, about 10 days to the program. So the reason being because right now in the lockdown, Centennial has car-free weekends. And I was doing some running yesterday and I ran a half. I did the 2-hour run on the weekend and I ran it on the road. So I ran it where the car lane is. Mm. And the car lane has this line that runs through it, not a drawn line, but like a cement line where the cement meets or like where they've poured it somehow. But that line is exactly the flattest part of it. So because it's a slightly sloped, if you run on the edges of the car lane, you kind of running kind of on a slope the whole time on either side, but kind of right in sort of the middle, there's this line that runs through it wherever that, however they've laid the cement, and it's like the flattest part. And the car lane is really flat, whereas the inside track, besides having lots of people, it has like lots of dips, like small dips in it from like the water or the soil or just however the ground is, because it's only made for foot traffic. And like when it rains really bad, you can see that there's heaps of divots where the water, there's like lots of puddles. But if you, the car lane is really flat, right? So all the water runs off it. So it's perfectly flat to some degree, much flatter. And what I realized was running yesterday versus running in the... you pay a lot more attention on the inside foot track because there are so many dips. And I reckon it slows you down because you're actually hitting these dip, like small dips along the way.
So you want to run where the cars go?
Yeah. So when I ran the half marathon on the weekend, I was running at a very relaxed pace. I was trying to keep myself very relaxed. I actually changed two things. One, no training partner on the long run. That was the first one I'd done without a training partner. And two, no music. So I was just, you know, my own thoughts. And I was able to run extremely fast compared to what I thought I could run at a very low effort. So I ran a 1:47 half marathon, which puts me only 2 minutes off the pace of running a 3-hour 30 marathon, which is my original goal I'd kind of let go of because I thought it would be too hard. Now, I completely understand those of you who run a marathon out there. I realize it doesn't really start till the 30-35 kilometer point. But, you know, it was a 2-hour run. So I still had 13 more minutes running. So I ended up running close to 25 Ks really comfortably, honestly. And the next day I pulled up fine. Wasn't that sore. No injuries, nothing. And I did not push in that run. I purposely didn't push. And there was towards the end of the run, I was running like I ran like 2 or 3 kilometers at like 4:44 and 4:47. So my point is that I feel like to run the best race, not just from a speed perspective, but foot traffic, people in the way, but I think the ability to stay as relaxed as possible, which is super important when you run for that long, I think I need the car lane. I actually think it's the most critical factor in this whole thing, because out on that car lane yesterday, Connor was with me, I was doing some intervals. I was switching between the road and the car lane just based off how busy the traffic was. And what I realized when I was out in the car lane is I could relax a lot more because you can just run continuously. It's like being on a treadmill. There's nothing in front of you. There's no divots to worry about. There's just a line that you have to follow and you can really get into that like flow state. And I got into that flow state a lot on the weekend where I was running, I was out there and my thoughts is very much like meditating, where if you've done meditating before, it's kind of like you get 50 thoughts just bombard you at once and then you settle and like you have like one thought train that you stay on for a while and then 50 thoughts come in and then you settle and then you stay on one thought train for a while. And that was
one
was
thought
happening.
Like, why the fuck did I do this marathon goal in the first place?
It's retarded. But actually, it was actually much easier, I found. It was easier running without music. I found music and podcasts, they actually irritate me more when I'm running. So I've stopped running with music. I find it really, I don't know, I feel like it's too much going on and I'm not able to relax as much. So I think music is useful for me when I need, like, I think we talked about this before, right? Really high intensity, maybe going for a big lift, going for something heavy, going for something really short. But when I want to be as conserve as much energy as possible, I like now running without any distractions or music. So anyway, back to my original point. I want the inside car lane. I think they're only doing car-free weekends because of lockdown. So I get the feeling that when we unlock October 18th...
That's your silver lining of COVID, bro.
Yeah.
Fast.
Yeah. But it means I got to pull my program 2 weeks forward. So my question to you is, do you think I should put, not all of it, but do you think I should compact more of the running sessions in a shorter time frame?
Do you want to cut 2 weeks off?
Yeah, basically. So do I cut the 2 weeks off completely or do I just push the training program into less time.
So you need to do the 32 You need to bring cut one on the way up and then cut one on the way down. There's one on the way down that's really unnecessary.
Okay.
So you've got one more run, then you've got a 32K, and then you've got your deload week. Is that enough, right? You got three more weekends?
No, I got like five more weekends.
Yeah, three more weekends and then the thing.
Yeah, something like that. I can look at you later, but so you reckon the combination of both? Like cut a week here, yep. Cut a week there.
Cut a week on the way up, cut a week on the way down.
Okay. So don't try and compress more running into a shorter period of time.
No, it's like the opposite of, I think, what you want out of a deload.
Yeah, okay.
That's like something I would do. Always make that mistake. Be like, oh, just like do extra in the deload and that will like get it done quickly.
No, I wasn't, not necessarily that. I was just thinking like, okay, I'm trying to cut 2 weeks off. I'll just cut 1 week completely and then that deload week, keep those the same, but the training weeks, say it's 4 weeks of training now, like compress that into 3 weeks. So run four times a week instead of three times a week. No, just cut the runs completely.
Yeah, cut the runs
completely. But make sure I do the 32.
Yeah.
That's important.
That's the most important run. Yeah, it gets your pacing for the whole thing.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, yeah, I might do that. And then later in this show, I want to get to the review of the shoe.
Do you think your weight loss is part of the reason you're running faster now?
Yeah, that is fucking depressing. So I was lifting in the gym the other day for the very rare occasion we get a chance to lift in the gym. And I was like, I actually kind of look a bit small. I was like,
I was thinking the same thing.
Don't start. So I'm like, fuck, I'm actually don't look as thick as I normally look. I'm like, it's probably nothing. You know, it's just, you haven't looked at yourself training in a mirror for a while. Anyway, so I go home and I weigh myself.
And that's the locker room mirror that honestly makes you look better than normal.
Dude, so I go home, right? And I step on the scale. 89.7. First time under 90, fuck, in probably, I reckon, 5 or 6 years at least.
I remember when you first got to 90, because it was a pretty big deal. We tried to get it for a long time. That was a very long time ago. That was like...
Dude, I'm telling you.
When we did first opened the gym, which is like, I don't know, 6 years ago maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the combination of, I'm probably only doing weights like three times a week. And then when I do weights, it's like really, it's like a pathetic session, right? Because we're like, got 30 minutes. It's in between the sessions of all the clients. We have 20 kilo dumbbells.
Yeah.
We have a barbell. I lift a little bit of weight. You know, some lifts are relatively heavy, but there's nowhere near enough volume. And with all the running and just probably not eating enough, to be honest, like probably eating the same, but overall, I think my calories are down just because I've been eating like, for some reason, I've just been eating really high fat in the mornings and it kills your appetite till like the evenings. Like I'll have bacon and eggs and then a meat patty. And it's like, I'm so full from that. And yeah, as a result, I've just lost it. I lost probably a good kilo and a half, I'd say 2 kilos. And my body composition wouldn't have changed. So I would have lost the muscle for sure. But despite that panic, okay, we'll get back. So I'm not too worried. I'm not in a rush to just put the weight back on because, yeah, it's probably going to help.
It's definitely, I think, helping you.
Yeah. So I'm not too worried about it.
You're on the heavier side.
Yeah. But that's kind of why I liked it as well. I was like, oh, it's cool because you're like 90 kilos, 92 kilos, and you're running a marathon at a pretty good time. That's like more of a claim, right? The heavier you are. I look at the skinny guys, they're running past me. I'm like, yeah, but it's because you're skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, but if you, like, cool, 65 kilo guy, fucking blitzes past me when I'm running. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, let's meet in the middle. Okay, let's keep running because they run past you in a way that's like, yeah, I see you like fitness guy, but like I'm smoking you. It's like you're in my domain now, you know? And I can just tell by the way they run, they kind of like look over their shoulder like, I'm smoking you, bro.
100% they do.
They do, right? They do. This is their domain.
Runners are huge superiority.
Yeah, they're crazy superiority. And I feel like going
what
up
are you,
to
5 them, 5Ks into your pathetic run, 40Ks down.
I feel like going up to them like, bro, you're 65 kilos. How about you just put on a 15 kilo vest? It's not even going to take you up. You still be a 10 kilo difference. Then we'll do the same run. Let's see who runs faster. That's what I feel like saying. But if I come down too low, it's not going to work. But anyway, I got a nutrition recommendation from Jordy Sullivan, good friend of the show, fight dietitian. Yeah, look at the protocol he gave me.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's very detail oriented.
So I said, how have you been so generous and just giving me this giant protocol? He goes, oh, all good, bro. I'm running an ultra right now. I'm prepping for an ultra. So he's like, I'm going like balls deep in this.
What's
stuff.
An ultra like? Probably 50 kilometers.
I think
plus.
Ultra is 50 plus. Yeah. So I don't know how far he's going, but he's getting really into it. Anyway, so he said, here are a few recommendations, and this is for anyone that can take it over because I don't really know anything about this race nutrition. I mean, I know about hydration, but I don't really know about the carbs and the eating and stuff. So a preload the day before, and he wants me to practice this before my long run.
And he's taken into account how big you are.
Yeah. 7 grams per kilos of body weight in carbs. If you had literally waited like 2 seconds, I would have answered your question. So 7 grams per kilo body weight. So that means if I work off 90 kilos, That's 9 times 7. That's 630 grams of carbohydrates. That is the day before my long runs.
The whole day.
Yeah. In the whole day. So that's what he wants to practice the day before my long runs in training. So I'm very excited. Eat 600 grams of carbs.
Is that today?
No. Tomorrow. No. My long runs are on Saturdays and Sundays. I haven't decided when I'm going to do this one. And he gave me some suggestions, but he said you might need to break out the Pikelets and the Maximus and mix it in a blender.
It's a lot of carbs.
Dude, 600 grams.
Yeah, it's heaps.
Crazy. And he said, importantly, he goes, just so you know, because...
On the 10,000 calorie challenge, I ate 800 grams of carbs for some perspectives. That's a lot.
That's a lot of carbs. I got to get started early. he said, mix in fructose in there. So he's like, make sure you're having fructose in there.
Oh, yeah.
He said, be careful. He says, keep your fats low and your fiber down. So he says, you don't shit yourself mid-run. Because if you eat too much fiber the day before and too many fats, then as that carbohydrate starts moving around in your guts in the run, he's like, you will shit yourself.
But also, I think TrainAid has a particular ability to make people shit themselves.
And then he says, make sure you top off your liver glycogen in the mornings, because he said you're obviously fasting overnight and you generally deplete about 80 to 90 grams of liver glycogen. So pre-run, he's like, have 90 grams of carbs, which is actually a lot of carbs just pre-run, and like do it before you even warm up. And yeah, he said, like, mix it all in. And then my protocol is, he said, from about 5 kilometers in or 30 minutes into your run, you need to keep topping up your blood sugar. And that's just like kind of managing the glycogen store the whole way through. So yeah, really, really trying to make sure that every sort of 25 to 30 minutes, every five kilometers or so, I need to be consuming about 60 grams of carbohydrates in the hour. So 30 grams of carbohydrates every 30 minutes, roughly, through the whole run.
It's not too bad.
Yeah.
And it gave
me
a lot.
Yeah, it's still quite a bit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's still quite a bit. It gave me some food suggestions, jelly beans, Clif bars, Maximus, which is like a more carb-heavy Gatorade, Pikelets, honey. So he wants me to eat foods. I was like, oh, I don't know about foods. He's like, no, you need to eat food.
Not the gels?
No, he said you need to eat foods. And I spoke to one of our running partners, Herman. He said, no, foods, absolutely. So he's like, you need to practice running and eating. Because he's like, you're like running and eating when you're really tired is like a skill.
Well, that's, so you don't choke. You practice that in COVID. You're not allowed to sit down at restaurants.
It's true, but I wasn't running. And then...
And keep your mask on for the whole run, right?
Yeah, and he said, to report in how I go. And yeah, keep the hydration going the whole time. Like, make sure you're just sipping on that sort of stuff. But he's like, if you just mix in your carbohydrates with your hydration, like with Maximus, he's like, you'll be fine. You'll be hydrated enough.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense to me, because I remember when I was doing my run, like, I just generally found that the more carbohydrates I had, the better. I probably didn't ever get up to as much as you're taking. Maybe pretty close.
Mm.
But it was always like, I started with way less than that and did more and more and more. Like, everyone's been better than the last.
What, remind me again what that, what your protocol was when you did that half marathon?
Every single lap I would have, it's actually pretty similar.
No, you did an event at Blackmores or something.
I didn't have anything.
Oh, you didn't have anything?
Not much.
You just ran it straight.
Just no water, nothing.
Well, and you ran 5 minute Ks for that? What was it?
Yeah, it's like basically exactly what you just said you did your half marathon in.
Oh, okay, like 147 or something. Yeah. Yeah. Man, the half is just like, none of the nutrition really matters for the half.
No, it's fine.
Really, yeah.
It's all in the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
I probably would have done a little bit better if I'd known, but I was
like some caffeine and gels and shit.
Yeah, I was like, oh, just too scared. Like, there's so many people at those drink stations.
Yeah.
I was like, I was going to run into them, like, fall over.
Yeah.
I was like, just leave it.
No, and I really think that I almost might have a slight advantage running it at Centennial outside of the event, which I'll do at some point, run a marathon at an event.
If I come for a lap, how fast am I going to have to run with you?
No, I'm going to start off fairly slow, because I want to start in the mornings where it's cold.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed on the weekend, it was quite cold. I ran it like 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and like they're pretty much all shade at that point. And the coolness of it, because most people walking, they were on the walking track, were in jumpers.
Mm.
What I realized, and then now I've done some runs in the heat this week, and you get
big exhaust. Difference.
Huge, right? Huge. So I need flat track, and I need to start early because I still need the coolness. Because, you know, come 4 or 5 weeks from now, it's going to be pretty hot. So I need to make sure that I start early enough so that most of the run is like, you know, below 20 degrees.
Yeah, well, it slowed down Kipchoge by like 4 minutes.
Yeah, dude, it's massive. Like 4 minutes, 5 minutes is huge.
For him, it's a lot.
Dude, that is huge. That's a lot of time for those guys, right, at that pace. So yeah, I need it cool. I need the nutrition dialed in.
Are you going to put the nutrition like...
Yeah, I'll need to do that. Yeah, or have someone there that can like hand it to me as I'm running. Yeah, but what I was thinking is like set it up, because obviously Centennial has like... some faster parts where you're kind of running downhill, and then it has some up parts. What I might do is have the nutrition station at the up part where I'm like slowing down, so it's easy for someone to hand it to me. Because in some of those bits, I'm running like 440, 430, because I'm kind of like using the momentum downhill, just trying to relax into it and opening up my stride. But then when I go up the hill, I shorten my stride and I slow down a lot. And it's like 5 minute Ks, 505. That's when it's probably better to get the nutrition in, when I feel like I'm flying.
I did the same thing on the uphill.
Yeah.
I just put it on top of a car. No one stole it.
Yeah, I could do that. Unless, yes. Yeah, wherever I can grab it easily, right? What I don't want is like have to go off the track, like go on the ground.
Queue in line at the shop.
Yeah.
One Maximus, please.
Like stop. Yeah. So, man, it's going to be good. I do think, like I was going to say, the event fucks a lot of people up for their first time because of the adrenaline.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the experience.
Heart rate's gone very high before.
Too high, right? Yeah. It's like most people, anyone who's done a CrossFit event or any functional fitness event, and they've got the adrenaline going of the crowd, and they always go, dude, that's like the craziest wall I've ever hit, right? It's the most pain I've ever been in. It's because you just went out so hard.
Yeah.
Right? But you had so much adrenaline, you couldn't feel it. So in your head, you're like, no, I'm saying relax, I'm moving smooth. And the roll is at like 3,000. Yeah. you're like, no, but I was just chilling on the roll.
I was feeling so good.
It's like you rode way too hard for the first round. And that is why people hit the wall so hard. So I actually think it'll be good starting off. It's quiet in the morning. It's pretty dark. It'll be cold. I actually want to like start at like 5:10, 5:05. Start at a really, really slow pace and build the speed throughout the marathon. That's what I think is going to be the best, because I really think that starting at the race pace or at the goal pace is like too aggressive.
Mm.
And it's like, no, I feel good. And then 30Ks in, you're like, I started too
fast. And I think for you, there's probably plenty of time to speed up.
Yeah.
Like an hour in, it feels good, you can just speed up.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that always just ends better, right? Mm. When you just start way too slow and just build into it versus like, I started too fast. That's just over. It's over at that point. So, yeah, if you want to start with me, I'll be running like, 5:10, 5:15 at the beginning.
I'll do one lap.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be good. I will announce the date at some point in the future. But anyway,
let's see how we get a crowd down there.
So you're not done with your pack marching. You've got, you don't have a run, but you got a march.
Oh yes, we got, this has like now become like a new tradition at the gym. So we had another member that lost, what did Herman lose? He lost 15 kilos.
Yep.
And I ran 15 kilometers with him with 15 kilos. So all the way he lost, basically. We put him back to his starting weight. So I was like, oh, I'll do this for anyone that loses a lot of weight. Had another member who has a huge weight loss. He's actually lost 31 kilos, but I've capped it at 30 kilos because the vest doesn't go any heavier. I told him that was it. So he's gone from, what has he gone? I think from 132 to 100 is his actual weight. So he's gone back up to 130 for this. We definitely can't run. So we're going to do the 30 kilometers with his original weight. So back up 130. I'll be at about 125 kilos for this. And it's as many
125.
Kilos. 125? Well, I weigh, 115. I weigh 85 kilos.
Right.
So I'll be at 115.
Oh my God, we're almost the same weight again. Fuck, I need 600 grams carbs immediately after the show.
And then obviously we can't run this. So we're doing 30 kilos for 30 kilometers because he's lost 30 kilos in total. So it's beyond the realms of running. So we're going to walk it. It's going to take a very long time. I've done absolutely no running, no walking of any side to get into this. He's prepared for it properly. He's been doing like 20, 25 Ks most days of walking.
In the vest?
No, touched a vest.
Oh, okay.
So he's actually very unprepared.
I
actually think the main challenge would just be like just the shoulder pain. Coming weight, because it's going to take like six, depending on how Chris goes, 6 to 8 hours.
Oh, yeah, it's a long.
Yeah, I mean the conversation is going to have to be quality to keep our spirits up during this.
So silence.
I thought I was like, dude, like, should we just bring like an audiobook? Yeah. Like a 7 hour audiobook?
No, bring a book. Read it to each other. Read chapter for chapter.
So we're going to attack it tomorrow. I'm going to try and start us off at the fastest walk I can. But now I'm thinking about it. I haven't prepared anything in terms of food or anything, and I probably should have done that.
Soft shoes, right? Not barefoot shoes.
I thought about the barefoots and I realized bad idea.
Bad idea.
Because so heavy as well.
Bad idea, bro.
So I was going to wear my runners.
Yeah, bad idea. Yeah, runners, good idea. You're going to need aid station for sure. Haven't thought about it.
No. I haven't thought about it at all, really, until this morning.
No, I just go to the supermarket, go Pikelets, honey. This is what Geordie recommends.
Okay, I'll do this, yeah.
Yeah, Pikelets, honey, Maximus, the big one, and some bananas, some fructose in there as well. I'll be smashing those throughout the thing.
Okay, done. Yeah. I'm going to do it with a shopping bag.
That'd be a good trial, yeah. I'll try it
tomorrow. Like, we're going to do a fast walk. We're going to go as fast as we can. It's just with 30 kilos, you can't run. Like, it's a fast walk into shuffle.
You'll hurt yourself if you run.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like too much pressure. But yeah, it's interesting where it goes. Regardless, guys, all this stuff is being documented at the moment on our YouTube channel. So if you guys are, if you're YouTube fans or if you like some more detailed I guess, podcast style, but video version. You know, the Instagram's good, but the Instagram is short, right? Short, sharp stuff. But if you guys want something, it's much suited to our skill set, which is the YouTube sort of stuff. We just put out Behind the Project, which is our, really the seasons documenting the growths of these companies. And I think we just live in this cool era, you know, 2021, where, you know, our forefathers, the generation before us, they built companies. We didn't get an inside look at them. We didn't get the behind the scenes. They didn't do YouTube channels, but we live in this very connected, very digital world where, yeah, like it is becoming not common, but it is normal for us to be able to document the building of our companies. And I think it's a really cool opportunity for you guys to look behind the scenes of how we do things and just come along for the ride. And so, yeah, check that out on our YouTube channel. It's the Mind Muscle Project on YouTube. We've got interviews up there. We've got, like I said, Behind the Project season one. That's just episode one has just dropped. It's going really well. The feedback's great. And yeah, we'll be putting out more stuff on there, some more educational content and some video ideas. So plenty of stuff to come. Definitely make sure that you guys are checking it out. All right, so we're going to jump into today's listener questions. Before we do, we've talked about it before, but if you guys are a coach, if you help people lose weight, if you are a PT, group fitness instructor, nutrition coach, and you want the best knowledge, right? If you struggle a little bit to help clients lose weight, or maybe you inconsistently help clients lose weight, you know it's calorie deficit, you know it's got to do with counting calories and macros, but you just can't seem to get the results that you want with your clients, then you need to do Tony Bataji's Fat Loss Fundamentals course. Of course, we had Tony on the podcast for an interview. of course. And he did an amazing job. We got such good feedback from the episode. And he does online courses. So if you guys want to check out what he's got coming up in September, on September 27th, it's his Fat Loss Fundamentals course. It is starting September 27th, like I just said. So you need to get in soon. And you're getting 10% off when you go to our link, themindmuscleproject.com/Tony. Again, our website, themindmuscleproject.com/Tony, where you can sign up for that Fat Loss Fundamentals course and join some of the Locker Room and Creature Fitness coaches on that course. All right, question number one.
Cool. We've got some good questions today. Three really good ones that I think will lead to some long answers. This is Anwar Shirazi. Not 100% if it's a female or a male. Maybe someone can help me, but he or she is 39 years old and has been training for over 20 years. Over the past few years, I've definitely seen a decline in my results. My body weight and muscle mass has plateaued. I weigh 70 to 72 kilos consistently for the past 2 years. I ate around 2,000 calories, has gone up to 2,500 at some points. I do resistance training 4 to 5 times a week, along with 10,000 steps of walking a day and boxing 1 to 2 times a week. I wonder what are some changes that you would recommend I try. My goal is for body composition change at the moment and get down at 68 kilos at approximately 12% body fat. Currently, I am at 15% body fat.
Okay, so they want to lose weight.
Yeah, she wants to go down.
She
wants to go down.
Well, that's good, because gaining weight, the older you get, it's more difficult, I feel, gaining muscle mass, because the hormones aren't there for it.
Yeah, I mean, profile. He or she's been training since 19 to 39.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you've you kind of know what you're doing, but also you get in this place where you just probably need to mix it up a lot. Like, there's probably a lot of stuff that you haven't done and that's been neglected. So, I mean, we don't have the full context here, but my best guess is that it's time to get on a very specific program, maybe have a coach and get on a very specific diet protocol. It's like the longer you get into this stuff, obviously it's still the basics, it's still the fundamentals, but you do need a coach, I find, to help you kind of stay accountable and really guide you along this path, an expert coach who's done it with other people before, because yeah, very likely you've kind of got yourself into a little bit of a rut. You're kind of doing the same exercises, same intensity, same movements, and you're just maintaining. And it's just like a really easy trap to fall into. It's a trap I've fallen into before, Raph's fallen into it. And there's nothing wrong with maintenance, but it sounds like in your case, you do want a result. So the best thing you can do is to get a coach, get some professional guidance, and take the thinking out of your hands, which is always good. It gives you back time to focus on other things in your life and just know that someone's looking out for your best interests and you're on track, right? It's the service we provide for people. It's the thing they say they love the most. It's like, cool, I just know I'm in good hands. I'm with an expert and everything's on track. And that's probably the best way to do it because, yeah, you can only really keep yourself accountable and do your own protocols for so long. It's not maybe not your full-time job, so your expertise is limited. So I'd recommend going out and getting a coach.
Yeah, and I just think that it's probably a mindset shift. I mean, you're basically getting into your 40s now. It is a multiple harder, I think, to have these sort of results in your 40s as it was in your 20s when you were training. So in your 20s, it might have just been like, yeah, training 4 times a week and doing some boxing. And like, sweet. And now it's probably like, yeah, having a full coach. You might need to do like go to a doctor and do blood testing, do hormone testing, and like really throw a bunch at this, and probably be very disciplined as well. Because I think it's working with clients, like it is so much harder at that age as it was when you first started your training 20 years ago.
And only because you're so advanced as well. I wouldn't make all these recommendations and go to this length if you weren't so advanced, if you hadn't been lifting weights for 20 years.
You're doing all the basics.
Yeah. Someone said, oh, I just want to lose some weight. I've never done anything before. Cool, we start with the basics. But it's like...
But you're tracking calories, you do your steps, you train consistently, like you're doing a lot of good things.
Yeah, we need to kind of eke out the small little details here that we don't really know that an expert would help us find. Nice. All right, next question.
Next question, Patty_turnout. Pretty challenging one as well. What are three bits of advice you know to be true? And it doesn't have to be health.
Three bits of advice you know to be true. Oh, it's actually a good question. Okay. So one quote that was, who was I talking about with this quote? Oh, man, it's funny because something like this came up exactly this week. And I said, there's like some quotes that remain true and there's some quotes that kind of like get disproven in some ways. But the one that I find always remains true is it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to what happens to you. I think that's some version of the quote. But basically, I just think that you really can take anything on, like really anything that happens in your life. And the reason I say that is because there is nothing out there that can completely break someone, because we have so many examples of things that would break people that don't, right? Like the concentration camp, you know, is it Viktor Frankl, the author? Like his work, you know, we've got horrific stories of like Naomi Park. Is it Naomi Park, the North Korean defector?
Oh, on Joe Rogan?
Yeah. Is it Naomi Park? Or Park? I don't know, whatever her name is. You know, we've got horrific stories like this. We've got guys like Francis Ngannou, who's like the UFC heavyweight champion, who like escaped from his country, Cameroon, and like jumped over a barbed wire fence, got shot at, and like somehow moved to a country where he didn't speak the language, French, learned French. And it's just madness, right? There's just so many versions of these stories out there that people can overcome any situation, because it's not what is happening to them, it's how they are reacting to these situations. So I always find that is really the truth. And I always try and think about that I shouldn't be scared of anything that's going to happen to me. Like whether that is, you know, for a lot of people, the death of people that they love, you know, things like this do happen. I know people in my life who are objectively exceptionally successful people that you would think on paper like, wow. And until you know their personal stories and what's happened to them, you think, how did you become the person you were with something like that traumatic and that bad that happened to you? And you realize that, yeah, it's about the reaction. It's how you come back from these things. And that is ultimately what it comes down to. It's even like the best athletes, right? Kobe snaps his Achilles and then comes back in his last season and gets like a, I don't know, 70-point game in his official retirement game. Like, you can get through anything. You really can. And I think that's just a truth that you should appreciate and understand and always remember when hard times come, because they will come, right? And, you know, Jordan Peterson, the famous author, he always says, you know, if a loved one dies and it ruins you and it cripples you, he's like, you're weak. Like, you are weak. He goes, you need to be strong. You need to be ready for when these things happen, because people will look to you as a source of strength. And he goes, people will die all the time. He goes, but when your loved ones die and you bury them in the ground, you need to be strong. It doesn't mean you can't be sad, but you need to be strong. So, and if you're not, you're weak. There's nothing more to it. So that's one thing.
Man, I was thinking about this, I think, for a good second one here. And this is, it's kind of been true with the pandemic, but it's particularly applicable to health.
Calorie deficit.
Is not true. It's basically exactly that. It's really just that people are never going to agree on stuff. I think it's something that I thought more with the internet. I was like, oh, you'll definitely get like the truth on like health and fitness. Like it'll start to come out because there's so much information now. But it doesn't matter what the point is. The spectrum of disagreement will always be there. There are always people that just, I think it's just their personality. Mm. They're going to disagree. Mm-hmm. You notice it's like genetically, there's like a poor population. It doesn't matter what topic it is. 15% of people like completely opposite side of it. 20% of people that may be like, oh, like slightly different viewpoint. And then you get 40% that maybe agree with what you're thinking, no matter how objectively true it is. Mm. The disagreement is always, always going to be there. You just have to like, because eventually you just get over it and you just, no matter what news comes in, you're like, oh, looking forward to like the other side of this, which is going to come out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. People, it's tribal, right? It's like in our genetics.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's that hardwired stuff in us. Man, probably the last one, well, I know he said three and I've taken two, so maybe we'll do four so you can do another one. But one of the other ones that I think is pretty good is the rule of kind of, I guess, like the one percenters, or the 10 to 1 percenters, I guess, is, and that rule is, or that law is, that like in any field, like an athletic field or a business field, personal, whatever, there will always be like a hierarchy of people that are good at those things. So, for example, it's like people that don't know about personal training think that all personal trainers are pretty good, right? And they all earn a similar amount. But when you get into the field, what you realize, it's just like any other field, like athletics, is that there is a 1% or whatever the percentage is, a top tier, that tip of the spear that is so far out and away of everyone else that, you know, in terms of how much they earn, in terms of their knowledge, their expertise, in terms of the results that they can get, in terms of how well people know them, their celebrity status. And that 1%, that percentage doesn't really change, whatever it is. Let's call it 1% for argument's sake, right? That isn't like 50%. It's not like, well, in this particular field, the rule doesn't count. There's actually 50% all do exceptionally well, or 20% all do. No, there's always that 1% rule. There's always that class of people that exist in any field that absolutely obliterate the rest of the field. It's how I feel we are when it comes to running gyms. You know, it's what it's like in podcasting. I would say that in our context of fitness in Australia, we are in that 1%. But there's loads of fitness podcasts out there. And it's just for some reason, it just doesn't work out that these other people can. And it's not like that should stop you from trying, because you want to try and be that 1%. But there is just a law that governs, hey, that we've only got room for so many people here. We've only got that room for 1%, right? It's like within the NBA, they're obviously all amazing players, but you only know a handful of players, right? You only know 10 to 15 players, because amongst all the elite people, they're still the 1%. So no matter how elite the group is, because the NBA is the 1% of basketballers in the world, but still within the NBA, there's a 1%, you know? So it's kind of like billionaires as well, right? Within billionaires, how many billionaires are there? Like 2,000 or something in the world?
I think there's a lot these days. It's going up like rapidly.
It was on that show, yeah. Unexplained or something on Netflix.
It's in the thousands, I think.
Yeah, but within the billionaires, there's like 1% of them have like 99% of the wealth. You know? There's like heaps of them that have 1 billion.
Yeah.
And then there's like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and a couple of Mark Zuckerberg. And they got like a few hundred each. Yeah. And they like obliterate everyone else, right? And so I think that just that 1% rule is kind of like always there, and it always exists. And like you want to always strive to be in that 1% and copy the 1%, because they're exceptional at what they do and they get themselves there. And it, you know, everyone will have their strengths and weaknesses to be in that 1%. And I think that the sad part is people try and make the 1% for things that they're never going to make the 1% for, and they're constantly disheartened, constantly falling behind. It's like sometimes I see gym owners, right? And I'm just like, it's not for you. You know, you're just not really a good gym owner. But you could be a 1% like nutrition coach, right? Or you could be a 1% just coach, you know, but you're just not made for this, the business side of things, the gym things. You just don't think the right way. It's just not really for you. But you want to, it's different if you don't care and you're like, whatever, I'm happy being average. But if you do want to be in the top 1% at something before, you know, you're 6 feet under, you got to find where that thing is and get exceptional at it, I feel. That's going to be your greatest contribution.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it is that, I don't know if you noticed, but obviously some things are like sharper than others. So some things are more like the winners take so much of the top and there's so much less for the losers. Other things are like not as sharp. It still always exists, but it's like a bit sharper and less sharp. And the things that are really sharp, so the things that are like the most unlikely you're going to be towards the top, are the things that attract the most people into it. Think like about sport. Like sports and entertainment, things like that, like
music,
being an actor. They're like insane winner takes all. Like the very insane top actors just earn so much, but they're like, if you're just pretty good at acting, you're basically like on the street.
Yeah.
Like you have a side job. Whereas if you got into just like business or being a lawyer or something like that, I mean, I guess business now is becoming more popular, but still, like if you're just like a pretty good business, like well above average, and you're like, I don't know, the 500th best in Australia, you are absolutely loaded. You got like some $20 million house, like if you're in like the top 1,000. But if you're top 1,000 soccer players, you're just, I don't know, you're on the bench for Sydney FC.
Yeah.
So it's funny how you got to sometimes think about it, I think, before you really
just
get
a little stab at the A-League. Yeah. You're in the bench of the best A-League squad. No, that's awful. If you were the bench of Liverpool, you'd be like, fucking fantastic.
Yeah, then you then you are at the very top. Yeah. But it's an interesting one. I think that sometimes you do have to think about, like how competitive is the game I'm getting into, and you know, at what standards do I have to get into here for it to be a success?
Yeah. Like what is acceptable for you? It's true. Like all fields that are popular. Great question. Man, I enjoyed that question a lot more really than good. Some other questions.
Okay. And this is a question, Carliatira, and it's specifically, it's kind of funny because you're struggling with it at the moment for your marathon training program, about you. What are your thoughts on building your endurance fitness while trying to maintain your strength?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You need to eat more, that's for sure. Well, I'm doing a woeful job of strength training right now. That's the truth. And the truth is, if I had just kept up a really good strength program during this, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. So my advice is...
But I think you wouldn't have gone as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to know.
Hard to know, yeah.
Because I was still running well without losing the weight, but now maybe I'm just running
I don't know. I think if you try, yeah, you would have maintained more weight. If you tried to go up your legs training, it would have been a challenge.
I don't think I would have kept up my legs training. Yeah. I just think all my training with weights has just kind of dropped off the consistency. But yeah, look, it's hard to argue that being a little bit lighter is not going to be more beneficial. I think it is. So yeah, if you're improving your endurance, but you also want to maintain your strength, just depends what the priority is. If the priority is maintaining your strength, but you're happy to lose a little bit of weight, then just follow a program and like don't let it be a crazy program, right? Just pick a few different components of strength. Maybe it's a pull-up. Maybe it's like dips, you know, squats or whatever. Just try and maintain those and then really focus on your endurance and let likely your weight come down a little bit. But, you know, if your strength is really important to you and you only want your endurance to go up a little bit, maybe you just want to like get some baseline of endurance, then stick to a pretty regimented strength program.
I think it's also probably where you need to reach out for coaching help more, because that's fine with the program stuff. If you just want to improve one thing, it's usually pretty simple. Like most people have a lot of success with like a template program. Like right now you're on like a good quality template program for running.
Yeah.
Obviously working quite well.
Yeah.
As soon as you get into the realm of like, I want to do this and get really strong stack and like stack the things, a bit kind of like CrossFit training, why I think coaches became so popular in CrossFit. The complexity of the programming goes up dramatically. Yeah. There's no templates for you to really buy, or they're often just not appropriate, and you have to invest in someone to help you.
Yeah.
Because that's where I think, you know, being more of an expert really comes into it.
Yeah.
That's why people with like, you know, people like Training Think Tank and stuff, I think got really popular in CrossFit. People are like, oh man, my running sucks, my gymnastics is terrible, and I'm weak, but I'm really strong at doing deadlifts and bench press.
Yeah.
And I've got no coordination. Mm. And they're like, wow, let's get programming.
Here we go. I'm going to need you to sign this contract for 5 years. okay.
Well, that's a pretty good question.
Next question?
Oh, that's it.
Oh, done. All right. Great questions, guys. Okay. So before we jump into the review today, I'm going to review a couple of things. Raph's going to review a show. I'm going to review the running shoes I've been using. This show is brought to you by Whoop 4.0. As you guys know, we talked about at the start of the show. I would highly recommend, if you're not already, getting on the Whoop train. 4.0 comes out end of September. So make sure you jump on board and check it out there. You just go to whoop.com.
And you if you just buy a 3.0 now, they'll just send you the 4.0 in the mail.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, so yeah, it makes no difference.
It's a free upgrade.
You don't need to like wait. It's not like an iPhone.
Yeah. Actually, no. Sorry. Go to themindmuscleproject.com/whoop is where you can check that out. Again, our website /whoop. Okay. So I'm gonna review my shoe first, and then Raph, you're gonna get into this show. So, I ended up just out of pure chance when I started this running journey, probably half a year ago, maybe a bit more. Decided, okay, well, I may as well get a running shoe if I'm gonna get into running. Ended up picking up the Nike Vaporfly. Now, it is a little bit confusing how Nike do their shoes, but they've basically got a whole suite of running shoes that range from their trail range, which I'm going to skip over. To their like kind of road training range, and then up to their racing range, and they've called them flies. So they've got multiple different versions. They've got the Nike Air Zoom Tempo, which is a road running shoe. They've got the Air Zoom Pegasus, which I believe is also a running shoe. For the cement, they've got the Zoom Tempo Next Fly Ease. They got all this shit right, but anyway, I ended up picking up the Vaporfly. The Alphafly is the one that Kipchoge ran the sub-2-hour marathon in. But I ended up, yeah, with the Vaporfly. And the Vaporfly is actually a racing shoe. So they've got running shoes, they've got racing shoes. Now, the racing shoe, in theory, is only supposed to be used for a race, and it only has enough kilometers in the shoe before the shoe is basically, in their marketing, you know, broken down, or it's like it's only designed to be worn for that short period of time before it's not really a good shoe to run in anymore. Having picked up the Vaporfly and worn it for at least the last 6 months of running, you know, a shoe that in theory is only supposed to have a race in it, so call it 40, 50 kilometers, maybe a little bit more, 100 kilometers, you know, I've run for 6 months in these shoes pretty consistently, and they're holding up fine. So don't fall for the Nike marketing. You can pick up one of their racing shoes and run in it pretty regularly. It may not last quite as long as the running shoes, potentially, how they're designed, but I wouldn't necessarily count on it. I reckon that they have designed these shoes better than what the marketing is putting them out there. They obviously just want you to have a pair of running shoes and also buy a pair of racing shoes. So rather than spend $300 on a pair of shoes, they just spend $600 on a pair of shoes. But
true genius.
They're definitely worthwhile. Now, these have like the carbon plate technology. Where
surely you can run multiple races in it, right? Or is it actually like one race?
It says one race, but I've been wearing it for training and I've worn it on trails. I've run
couldn't
on all.
Be that different.
I've run on all surfaces with it and it's definitely fine. The only thing is it is quite high off the ground. So I would not be wearing this on uneven surfaces because you can roll your ankle and that would be the end. But it does have a full length carbon fiber plate. So you will notice a difference. If you put these on and you start running, you are like actually being propelled forward. By some mysterious entity inside of your shoe. That is the carbon plate, and that is unique technology that a lot of people have some controversy around, but honestly, I don't give a shit, just whatever. So I have really enjoyed that shoe. Now, some people prefer some of these other brands out there, Hoka, Saucony, that are really good brands. Look, I think if you want to repel the opposite sex for the rest of your life, you can wear those brands. They're that disgusting, but I'm loving these Nike shoes. I'm just tossing up now whether it's too late to get the shoe, like a new one, and break it in before the race.
Oh, a racing shoe.
No, it's exactly the shoe I got. But I just get a newer version of them and start again.
Leading in. Makes sense.
You reckon it would help?
I have no idea.
Yeah. My shoe's in good condition, but sometimes I think you forget.
Yeah, it does. It's incremental.
And then you put the new one on, you're like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like I'm flying here. But I mean, you know, it's not a cheap shoe. It's $310 for a running shoe. And running shoes get trashed, right? It's not like a $300 shoe that you're going to wear and you're going to look after and go out to dinner in them. It's like, no, I'm going to run. They're going to get dirty. They're going to get wet. Probably going to break. I'm definitely not wearing that. The Alphafly? Nah, no way. That thing is... Yeah, that's... Not only is that nearly $400, but you better have like those tiny short shorts on that you wear. The tiniest quads ever, like the racing singlet, the stupid Oakley sunglasses.
Also, what the guy's wearing in the demonstration.
Yeah, and like that air of superiority, like I am an elite runner. There's no way I could put those on. That's the ultimate all gear, no idea. I'm not wearing those. No chance. You look like an absolute buffoon if you wear something like that, trying to do a marathon around Centennial. Unless you're on the starting line for the Boston Marathon and you look like a starving Ethiopian child, those are the shoes you wear. That's like, I'm not here to fuck around shoes. My ones are like, okay, you don't really know what you're doing, but you kind of got a bit of money to spend on some cool racing shoes.
How much faster do you reckon you'd go?
Because like no one wears those shoes, by the way. When I run around, the ones I've got, no one's wearing them because they're falling for the marketing. They're like, well, I'm not doing a race, so why am I wearing these? It's true.
That's your leg up.
Yeah. The Infinity React, I mean, I've never tried them. I mean, you've got them on, Connor, so you know what they're like. I know Ev's been wearing those for her running, and now she's got like full foot issues. She can't run.
That's good.
Yeah. So
should have bought the racing ones.
Yeah, so I don't know. I really like the shoes. I don't plan on changing, but I'm considering a fresh pair just for that extra boost.
What are you going to rate them?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Yeah.
Worth the $300.
Definitely. Yeah, I got serious use out of them.
Okay. My review is actually a Netflix review. Their content has been struggling, but they've come up with something good here. It is called Turning Point, and it is a 5-part series, which basically, I mean, it's in line with the 20th anniversary of 9/11, obviously, and it takes you from...
Oh, that's why they're talking about...
Yeah, heaps coming out about now.
Yeah, because Sam Harris put a new podcast on. I'm like, why is he talking about this
shit? No, it's 20 years. 20 but it's years. Also because we just left Afghanistan.
Yes,
but
got it.
That was also kind of lined up as well.
Got it.
Commemorating it, so it's all coming to a head. I think there's multiple documentaries.
Now, have you
on
looked
Netflix
into the facts in this show?
Of the show,
yeah. Have you looked into it?
No, but they go into the details here. Like you can see George Bush driving the drone from his office. He's got a remote control.
He's like, stay on course.
He's like, whoa, what a hit.
Dude, that's so insensitive.
That's actually not what happened. They do the true story of this one. This apparently the best one that they put on Netflix. It's 5 episodes. The first episode is starting just before 9/11, and then it gets to 9/11, and then basically 3 and 4 and 5, and then like everything after, like the next 20 years of it, basically a shit fight of what goes on after. I've watched the first two episodes, which is quite rare for me at the moment.
Yeah,
it's an hour long. But honestly, just really, really good. It's been a long time since 9/11 has happened.
Mm.
So I think for a lot of people, I mean, I wasn't there or anything, so it doesn't stick out that strongly in my memory. There was like a bunch of stuff that, like forgotten that's happened or like that was how it happened. I think I was...
I was eight.
Yeah, I think I was nine years old. Obviously,
Connor was two.
Connor never forgets it. He was two. And I mean, it's probably, I guess it's with COVID now. So it's in like, maybe Princess Diana dying is the other one. But usually we've got like people our age have like a couple things that everybody remembers. This is definitely one of them. I don't think anything bigger than that. Probably that, Princess Diana, and now
way
COVID.
Bigger than Princess Diana.
I think they're the events that nearly everybody remembers.
Oh, like global.
Global events. Every single, you know, news outlet anywhere in the world, everybody talked about that day. This is probably bigger. Anyway, it's actually excellent.
In the last 20 years, yeah.
I was going to say, 30 years.
Yeah, obviously, between that, you've got the wars, but that's it, pretty much.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking since like 1980s to now.
Yeah.
COVID's definitely been one, and then there was
these two. Yeah.
And this was absolutely nuts. And there's nothing new, and I looked up online, like no new information in this, but if you're sort of interested in like how the whole thing played out into like the complete mess we have now 20 years later, it's worth watching.
I'm interested for sure.
Definitely the first two shows are like exceptional because it is easy to forget, but it's like one of the craziest days there's ever been.
Well, I'm just looking at that photo there with the plane heading into the building, and it's just the most gnarly scene ever.
It's absolutely
like,
nuts.
It's just burned into your memory.
And, you know, even them just going through, like, people's reaction to it, you're like, no one has seen anything like this. It's the most nuts thing you
could absolutely comprehend.
The one thing that would be different, you realize when you watch this, is, like, how different it would have been if there were smartphones around. Because there's so little footage. There's quite a lot of footage, say, of, like, the second plane hitting the building. Because a lot of people, like, got their cameras out.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, the first one, there's, like, one shot of the plane hitting, and then there's like other shot where like the guy's got the camera on the ground on his shoe, and then he looks up like as the plane basically hit. If there were smartphones, this thing would have been totally different. You could just imagine. But yeah, I would say for nearly everybody, man, this is excellent, excellent documentary.
Does it go into all the conspiracy theories as well?
No, they stay on the truth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not about that.
Oh, okay.
It's just honestly about what actually happened.
Yeah, yeah.
That stuff is a waste of time.
The stuff where it's like the melting point of like concrete.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, I know it's a waste of time. But
no respect.
Okay,
for that.
But it's just, I just didn't know if it was something that went through the. It didn't go through any of the.
Nah, it goes through like what actually happened. Maybe in like episode 4, I don't think so. It really goes through like what happened, like what was George was thinking, like when did he get told, what did he do? Like quite a few really good.
But you know, conspiracy theorists will say that this is what they want you to think, right? That's what they will. That's what they'll say. They're hiding the truth again.
Yeah. Well, if they're hiding the truth, they do an outstanding job of this propaganda. And they got some really good, recounting of black people in the building, survivors, stuff like that, which is good. And then, I mean, the start is definitely the best, but if you're interested in kind of like more the politics and how it all went wrong, that's sort of interesting as well after.
What do you think is a more agreed upon conspiracy, that 9/11 was an inside job or that the moon landing was a hoax? Like, what do you think more people believe?
I think, honestly, the moon landing is more realistic as an inside job.
As a hoax.
Yeah, as a hoax. Fakes, because there's kind of some reason into that. It's like, they're trying to win this race up there. What are the real consequences of faking it? Not that bad.
Mm.
You know,
no one dies.
No one dies. Yeah. We'll get there eventually. This is like that. This is nuts.
Yeah, to call that an inside job. Yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah.
And like out of absolutely nowhere. They could have thought of a different reason to go to war in the Middle East. Because, you know, they go into it in the show, but there were several attacks leading up to this.
Yeah,
they attempts.
Underground bombs and stuff.
Yeah, they tried to hit the World Trade Center a number of times. Another guy who like tried to do it, he was like, I will get it one day. You know, Muslims, people doing it. So like, it wasn't that surprising, you know, in hindsight, as they go through it. They had heaps of good, intel leading up to it. Something was going to happen. Like, it was a thing that was building. It wasn't like out of completely nowhere.
No,
was just for the average person, it was out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, because like, you know, we didn't really
care about it.
Yeah, whatever. I was 5 years old and we didn't know about a bombing happened 3 years earlier.
Yeah.
No one was really concentrating on Al-Qaeda or whatever. But yeah, when they actually go into this, it was like they could see it coming. It was just bigger than they ever imagined.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah. And like we said, the truth is crazy shit will happen to you. It's how you react to it. Okay. That is the end of the show. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, make sure you go to the YouTube channel, subscribe, and check out all the new content that we're putting out, putting a lot of effort into that side of things. And I know you guys will absolutely love it. Thanks so much, guys. We'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.